Welcome to the History of Networking, where we drag all of the skeletons out of the wiring closet and ponder the ghosts of protocols past.
Recording and timer and 3, 2, 1. Hello, Donald. How are you today?
Good. How about you?
Good. I heard you're at the beach wandering around getting sand in your toes, which is awesome.
I am.
Ah, great. And Dawit, how are you today? You're joining us from where exactly? Because I lost track of where you are.
Hi, Russ. I'm doing fine. I'm joining you from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, from a very cold weather, very surprisingly.
So you're not going to the beach this week, are you?
No, definitely not.
So why don't we just start at the beginning and talk a little bit about how you got into networking personally, like how you fell into this whole networking world, and then kind of what role you play in the growth of the internet in the African region, because that's what we're kind of talking about today is the growth of the internet in the African region.
I finished high school around 85, and in fact, I was lucky enough to see the computer for the first time in a computer club even before I heard about what the computer is. I was excited by it, and after that I said I really want to learn more about it, but there was no computer science degree at the university where I went. But after 3 years, I managed to go to France and study computer science. And there, I was lucky to see the internet by myself again, even before I ever heard about the internet. And it was fantastic for me. I was surprised that there was something that can connect you with the rest of the world so quickly. And even at that time, it was late 80s, early 90s. Even in France, it was not as common for regular people to know about the internet. And then I went back home in 94, and then it was complete dark. There was no internet. So it was really like my mission, to get connection. But there was some connection, in fact. That is not true. There was no internet as such, but there was email. And the email was by PADISnet, which is the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, which has the store and forward email system just for Addis Ababa. So we were among the first to have at least the ability to send emails. Well, it was not that reliable. Sometimes you send something and you never get a response. And
just like today.
I was going to say, nothing's changed.
Yeah, for a different reason today. But at that time, it was just because the server crashed and whatever. But it was a lifeline. Many people started to use that. So I personally said we have to do something, and with some people here in Ethiopia who had an idea of what the internet is, we created a committee that we called Bringing Internet to Ethiopia. So the objective was to lobby for lobby the government to allow us to have the internet. I was lucky at that time to be selected for a training on internet technology by Internet Society, even before, well before I joined Internet Society, to go to Montreal, then Kuala Lumpur for the early INETs. I don't know if you have heard about them, but these were really the workshops that educated a good part of Africa and also Eastern Europe and some parts of the world. So many people really go there in a week, I think. We learn about TCP/IP, etc., and we come home even more, equipped to fight to bring the internet to our countries. While the technology was not the most difficult, was to convince people because in the government there were two kinds of people. There were those who were excited to see something new. And when we explain to them, they say, oh, that's fantastic. And there were those who were very, I remember some of the ministers, who were really very afraid of this because they've heard that there is pornography on it, that there is, many bad things on it. And so we tried to educate those people. And well, it didn't happen the way we wanted it, because we wanted it to have, some kind of autonomous organization to have it. Because in Ethiopia, we had, we still have until, the monopoly is over, but until 2019, June, we had internet telecom monopoly by the state. So it was not possible to have your own ISP. So we had to convince the government to create it. It was not possible for me to be an ISP, for instance. So it happened. The government chose to give that responsibility to the telecom company. It's a long story, but that telecom company is still the only one that provides the telecoms, internet service until now. So my involvement with Africa has started at those INET workshops. So at those INET workshops, we were many coming from Africa. We said, well, we have to do something. We really, this is an exciting thing for us. We went back home and decided to do something about it. One problem was communication, because there was no internet in most of the countries. So it's a good thing to want to do something, but how do you communicate with long distance calls? It was not easy. Some people continued to work together. Some, like me, didn't really work with them for two reasons. One, because of communication. The other one, because I was really not able to have my own personnel. For example, I couldn't open a private ISP. I couldn't really involve into that business unless I am an employee of the telecom operator. So for many years, I was really not very much involved in what was happening in Africa. And it is only in 2006 when I heard that the Internet Society is looking to regionalize its activities and is trying to open an African regional bureau. Then I said, well, the internet has been my passion, and I started to work with them. But from the 1995 to 2006, if I can tell you what I have been doing, so I said, okay, I cannot really develop the infrastructure, but at least I can promote the use of that infrastructure. So I opened with friends an internet company, but providing web hosting, web design, but the most successful was e-commerce. So I can say we were one of the first to have e-commerce in Africa in 1998. We tried to promote its use to the population. And you can imagine there was less than 1% of the population at that time that had access to the internet. But what we were doing was getting the diaspora to give gifts for the local members of their families. So, for example, they can send flowers to their relatives during their birthday, etc. So, but in 2006, I had the opportunity to work on Africa, and I am working with the Internet Society since then. And I have more opportunity to work with my colleagues around Africa in developing the internet.
So it's interesting. So you started out by doing e-commerce, but you said there were no providers. So how are you doing the e-commerce? Like, that's just interesting to me. That
No. In, I think it was in 1997, the state-owned telecom company started providing internet service.
Okay, so you were on the state-owned provider because that was the only option, because it was what we would call a monopoly, right?
Yeah, exactly. So they started to provide. So yeah, for someone like me who does not work there, I had no role in building the infrastructure. So the only thing that I could do is really use it and do something with it. And that is what I have done for quite a few years. But in 2006, when I joined ISOC, it opened a lot of opportunities for me because, I have been working with many people from all over Africa on many of their issues. The first one was on really promoting access. By 2006, most of the countries already had internet access because the 1990s were about connecting everybody. We wanted to make sure that there is no African country who was not connected. And it took really many, many years. I think it should be by the year 2000 that the last countries were connected. After that, the next battle was about having more and more people connected and having more and more bandwidths, because you might be surprised with the very little bandwidth that we had. I don't know if it is allowed to tell some funny stories in your podcast. So I remember a guy, I don't remember exactly the year, but it should be early 2000s, who were talking about, I think he's American, he went to a Western African country. And there was these cyber cafes, he was, there are about 10 computers, and he was working, and it was awfully slow. So he was he said, it's very slow. And he asked the manager, it's slow, what's your bandwidth? The guy told him 56K. 56 kilobit per second. And the American said, 56K for all these computers? The guy says, no, it's for the whole country. So that's how low we started, because we had to buy satellite. And satellite was very expensive. And as a result, you know, people buy it, and then you really have, you could really do, you couldn't do much until we had the fiber connectivities. So maybe I should talk about how we got fiber connectivity. That is,
well, I'm not even sure that's, we would have been able to have video conferences 10 years ago. Most of the world.
In the U.S. Yeah, most of the world. Maybe, maybe just around New York City, or maybe just around some of the labs or something like that. And now it's all the fault of the virus. Makes everybody do it all the time. Yeah. So cool. So, your personal part in it was, like you said, you started out just as a user, but over time, you've grown into participating a lot with building the infrastructure. Do you own or do you work in a provider at this point?
Right now, I am. I work for Internet Society. I am the regional vice president for Africa. I am, the Internet Society doesn't, you know, build the infrastructure itself, but it facilitates the development of the internet. We started, the Internet Society started in capacity building, technical capacity building, because in the 1990s, many people haven't heard about the internet, let alone to know about the technology. I really believe that it was a very smart approach, because I remember that the Internet Society was not the only one who was trying to develop the internet. There were very big organizations like the USAID, the UNDP, etc., that were also trying, we came with lots of money in Africa, to develop the internet. But they focused on the infrastructure. And Internet Society focused on building the capacities of people. And at the end, I think what was most important was were people, because if people know about the technology, they can find a way to bring, especially in countries where it was free to do so, they were able to bring whatever it was necessary to develop their own internet service provider. So that is what happened. In many countries, if you go and you ask who is the pioneer who really developed the internet in this country, you will hear that it's someone who has gone through those capacity building workshops. But this was at the beginning, but after the 2000s, there were ISPs, but there were many problems. I mentioned the submarine fiber cables problems. This was resolved thanks to many organizations that really worked to promote the development of those submarine cables. At some point, we thought it would never happen. It is too expensive. Nobody would come to Africa for that. Nobody would invest to Africa. But after the first one, it became like the gold rush. Everybody was really trying. And you might have heard that Facebook and others are also building major cable now. So I don't think that there will be shortage of submarine cables coming to Africa now. But there have been other problems, like connecting outside the big cities. It's still a problem because one particular peculiarity of Africa is that we have big cities that might afford the internet, but the rural areas, which are where there are more people, sparsely populated, they are not very interesting for commercial operators. So the internet society has been pushing to find solutions that will enable more and more people to connect. Another thing that we have done with the Internet Society in the last 10, 11 years is avoid or find solutions for the very strange problem that we had in Africa, which was, the way the internet was developed in Africa was that, people hear about the internet. It can be people like those of us who have been at the workshop, Internet Society workshops, but others as well. And they say, oh, this is fantastic. We can have an internet service provider. And they go and deal with a transit operator somewhere in Europe or America, and they use satellite, and they have their ISP. And many of them will have it in the same country. And as a result, if you are with one service provider and your friend is another service provider, your communication goes through Europe or America, even with that satellite connection. And even after the fiber cable came, it continues as such because they are competitors, and the competitors don't talk, and they are suspicious with each other. And it took us a lot of time to realize that it's silly. And they needed someone neutral come and really push them to get internet exchange points. And that we have done in the last 10 years.
Yeah, I was going to ask about exchange points, because I know that's played a major role in areas like South America. In Latin America, they've had most of their success in getting the internet rolled out to people has been through exchange points. So I was going to ask, how are the exchange points doing there in Africa?
Yeah, well, we have done a lot of work in the last decade, and I'm really proud to say that the Internet Society has, and with other partners, of course, we have managed to really change the landscape in the continent. Now we have more and more content exchanged locally, we still have, you know, some content that is some traffic that is exchanged internationally, but this is dropping.
Right. And that's probably big services like Netflix or things that, you know, are just going to be global anyway. There's probably not going to be much difference. And, you know, those are just always going to be global, I would think. Good. Now, is the growth of the internet helping bring lots of new economic activity? We often hear this when people talk about, we need to get the internet in because it will help economic activity or because it will do this, that, or the other. Have you actually experienced that? I mean, maybe we're kind of immune to it in Western Europe and the US and stuff like that, just because we're just so used to it just being there that, you know, it's not something we really think too much about.
It does bring a lot of activities. As you know, the internet is a platform where people use their creativity without anybody's permission to do something about it. So nobody gave really, a permission for Google to do what it did, or for Facebook, whatever they did. And this is happening in Africa as well. There are many applications that, mushroom and that are really changing some of the things that we do and that provide benefits for the owners, but also for the users. I can tell you, here in Ethiopia, we do have something very, very similar to Uber that really has changed the way we use taxis. People, thousands, tens of thousands of drivers depend on it to live every day. This means it is changing. It is changing Africa, but there are, of course, some limitations.
Well, there always are. that doesn't surprise me. I'm doing my dissertation around things dealing with culture and technology, so I probably have spent more time worrying about the limitations than most people have in the last little bit.
I think you kind of touched on it at the end there. I was really interested in unique internet offerings from Africa that we won't see necessarily in the United States. So, you said you have Netflix. Well, that's a very, American-centric service, I would say. Is there African-centric services that you could talk about?
It's true. One drawback of coming late is that there are, especially in the last decade, the internet is not as open for innovation as it was maybe in 2000, because these big companies, they are almost monopolizing many things, and it's very difficult to do anything that they are not doing. But still, there are some innovative things that are happening. I'm trying to they are trying to use the local peculiarities that others cannot really take care. For example, here in Ethiopia, there is someone who is trying to develop something like is it Quora or content development by the mass. So people are really adding content about Africa and in the local languages. So this is something that these are things that are difficult to do with the international platforms, and they are trying to achieve that. I wish there were more examples I could give you, but very often they have been limited by the support that they don't get from the local authorities. One of the big advantages that the Western world has, whenever there is a startup, then there is all this mechanism to bring that startup to become really a big company. We still don't have, even though there are some successes in these regards.
Thanks, Dawit. Do you have any place that you blog, or you're on Twitter or anything like that, where people can get in touch with you or follow what's going on, or a favorite website that people might want to go to that sells or that is kind of e-commerce or something in the African region that people might be want to follow up on and just see what's going on?
I think my Twitter handle is at Dawit Bekele.
Thanks, Dawit, for coming on. And again, this is History of Networking, and you can catch us on Ripe Labs and on Rule11.tech and on your podcaster and all sorts of other places. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time on the History of Networking.
Subscribe to the History of Networking on your favorite podcast service, or follow along at rule11.tech.